2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome in to another Baseball America Team Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We're continuing our Prospects podcast series today with the Texas Rangers. We're going to talk about the breakout of Evan Carter, get updates on Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker, and see what the Rangers can realistically expect from some of the players lower in their system, including former top picks Cole Wynn and Justin Foscue. To do all that, I am joined by my friend and colleague Josh Norris, who took care of the Ranger system for us again this year in the Prospect Handbook. Josh, thank you for joining me today.
Howdy, howdy. What's the 4 of 4 down for me and 29 of 30 down for you?
Yep, we are almost through this Prospects podcast series. It's been a grind, but a lot of fun talking about all the prospects and all the systems across baseball. And Josh, this isn't a system that's pretty fun as well. It's no secret the Rangers have struggled. They've had 6 consecutive losing seasons. General manager John Daniels was fired last year. Chris Young, who had already been brought into the organization, was elevated. He's now overseeing the organization. And the Rangers have been very, very aggressive in free agency the last 2 years. You remember after the 2021 season, they spent more than $500 million to sign Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, and John Gray, among others. This offseason, they signed Jacob deGrom as well as Nate Eovaldi. So they're spending money to fix the team in the majors without waiting for the prospects to arrive. But at the same time, they're also building a pretty good farm system, kind of pursuing parallel tracks. When you look at this system right now, how would you assess it and the outlook for it overall as the Rangers try and get back on a winning track here?
I think it's a pretty darn good little system. There's not a true, I think, super duper star at the top, you know, and that's reflected in our top 100. There's no, like, he's not top 10 guy or anything, but they've got a lot of fun, interesting guys sprinkled throughout the system. The top 10, I think, could look a lot better in a year. If a lot of the guys answered some of the questions, I think from 5 to 10, it was kind of a matter of sorting through whose red flags were less red, and how many of them there were. And there's some really interesting players coming from the lower levels, too, who could, I mean, down east this year should be really toolsy. I don't know how well that will translate to wins for the old Wood Ducks, but there's going to be a lot of really interesting prospects at that level this year. And, you know, it's a lot of upside in the system. And it got a little bit more when we just updated our 30s. We added Sebastian Walcott, their top international signee from this most recent period. So it's there's a lot of upside sprinkled throughout the system.
Yeah, there's definitely some lower level guys with upside, but there's also some guys who have gotten a full season ball and in some cases ascended to the upper levels and have shown plenty of upside as well. The number one prospect in the system is Evan Carter. And it's interesting. We talk about there's been a lot of top draft picks this organization has made because they've struggled so much in the major leagues. Josh Young was a first rounder. Jack Leiter was a first rounder. Kumar Rocker, the 3rd overall pick last year. We talked about Foscue and Wynn. But Carter's kind of surpassed all of them. He was a surprise second-round pick in the shortened 2020 draft, a guy not a lot of people knew a whole lot about. The Rangers at the time felt like if there had been a full high school season, he would have been one of the biggest risers. And I remember immediately talking to evaluators who were in instructional league that year, the only minor league baseball that was played. The reviews were pretty good on Evan Carter right away. He was limited to only 32 games in his first season in 2021, but last year in 2022 had a really good year. Hit for average, extra base hits all across the board, stole 28 bases, drove in runs, scored runs, got up to double A at the end of the year in his age 19 season. What do the Rangers have here in Evan Carter?
Well, there's really two ways this could go. If he gets stronger, they might have a superstar. I just said they don't have a super duper star, but that's a level above superstar. If he adds the strength, he could be a 5-tool monster. If he doesn't, you might have guys a little lesser, more with, you know, he doesn't have the power, but he'll have contact and on base and defense skills. He'll have a lot of the other tools besides power. Now, the Rangers do believe that based on the way his body looks, his hands, his feet, his neck, that he's going to grow into some power. So that's kind of the last thing. He's got strike zone discipline. He's got contact ability. He's got speed. He can play center field. He knows the strike zone like nobody's business. It's a really interesting player, and they did a great job. There was some kind of inside info that they had about him that maybe put them ahead of the pack. And, you know, I had heard at some point before the draft, I don't have very many draft sources, but I heard someone say that there's going to be a real big surprise in the first in the draft. And this was it. This was the one that they were talking about. They wouldn't tell me who, but someone says it's going to look like a team is punting the draft, and it won't be that. So this is a really interesting young player who, if he gets stronger, could be even higher than he is on our top 100.
Yeah, right now he's number 26 on our top 100, and again, has all the hallmarks of the Rangers center fielder of the future. And even if the power doesn't come, like you said, hit for average, get on base, play defense. And I think what stands out about him too is he has tools. You can project some physical growth, but he also has instincts. This isn't a raw high school kid. He was from a small town in Tennessee. And sometimes those guys, you know, get lumped into the, raw toolsy high school kid bucket. But he has instincts. He plays hard. He has a lot of the intangibles that give evaluators a real strong sense that he's going to get the most of his ability, which a lot of times is a separator.
Yeah, he's just a really good baseball player who happens to also have a lot of tools. And you're right, he doesn't have a whole lot. Didn't have a whole lot of experience coming in this year, because last year or 2021, he had some sort of back injury. I think he broke his back, which sounds worse than I guess it is. But he bullied Hickory last year and showed some gumption too by playing through a foot injury. He fouled a ball off one of his feet and then just didn't go on the IL, as far as I can remember. And once it kind of healed, he started showing himself a little more. I think the day he was finally back to 100%, he had, you know, a couple triples or something that day. And then he got to the Texas League for like the last couple of games of the regular season, last six games of the regular season and the playoffs, you know, small sample, but he went 9 for 21 in the regular season with 3 doubles, 5 walks, 6 punch outs, 2 stolen bases. And, you know, he was doing all that while he was 20 years old and is still 20 years old, as a matter of fact, just 20 years old when he got there.
Yeah, he turned 20 at the end of August. And again, a really, really impressive young player and someone who was pretty clear cut the number one prospect in the system. He'd really emerged as that during the year. I feel like after number one is where the debates start to get really interesting, because you're right, there are a lot of talented players in this organization, kind of sprinkled at all levels of the minors, different pedigrees, you know, whether they were top draft picks, college, international signees, high school arms. It's an interesting collection of guys. After Evan Carter, how would you say this group stacked up, and how many different names were kind of in the mix for number two?
I would say just the one. There was a case I could have made that Owen White would have been number one in the system. And I know some people do have Owen White number one in that system. He is, he's got a lot of things to like about him. He's got very little experience because of injuries and the pandemic and more injuries. He had the Tommy John, and then the pandemic happened. And then he came back and he had like one start and he punched the mound or something and broke his hand and missed most of the year. And then he came back and happened to pitch in front of this bear right here in Zebulon. And it was really interesting. He was throwing with a purpose. He, you know, had that fastball and he was going to throw it by you, going to freeze you with a curveball. He's got a slider and a changeup in there too. But what really stuck out was that he was pitching like it was the seventh game of the World Series, and it was not the seventh game of the World Series. And I think if he would have been allowed, he would have fought the entire Mudcats team. He was just had a pair of medicine balls kind of swinging by his hips, let's say. He was a cocky son of a gun. And that was really something to see from a guy who really didn't have a whole lot to back it up in his track record. And then he went to the Fall League and kind of did the same thing. He was one of like 4 good pitchers in the Fall League that year, at least when I was there. I think a decent one, Mackenzie Gore, left before I got a chance to take video of him. So there were not, it was few and far between in the Fall League, but he stood out and just kind of shoved every time out. So he's far and away, at the very least, the best pitching prospect in the system.
Yeah, I remember during the fall league in 2021 when he was pitching for Surprise, he was the talk of the league, and people were really, really high on what he was doing out there. I got out there in time to go see his final start, and it was impressive. I mean, you saw the stuff, you saw the moxie, you saw really kind of everything you wanted to see. And again, he went out this year, got up to Double A Frisco, performed well. But like you said, it's a limited track record. He threw 80 and a third innings this year, was 35 and a third innings the year before, and that was his first professional season, despite the fact he was drafted in 2018 for all the injuries. So only 115 and two-thirds career innings, but they've been really good. What's the plan in terms of build-up next year? And realistically, you know, what do the Rangers think can happen in terms of his ability to hold up over a full season?
I mean, he did get hurt again last year. He had, like, I forget, it was like tendonitis or something that kept him on the shelf for a little while. And he came back and he pitched in the final game of the championship series. You know, championship on the line, everything like that. Two innings, six strikeouts. That'll do. That'll play. Now, to answer your question, I mean, I don't really know what their plans are. I think he's going to be, I think he had a chance to be in the big leagues at some point this year. I think he was a little miffed to be in Hickory last year, if we're honest, to start the year. I think he earned his way with the fall league to get to Double A. And this is going to be a year where he has to go on. I think this is, look, he's on the 40-man, I think, right now. Either that or he needs to go on after this season. So they got to make a decision on him pretty quick. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make his big league debut at some point.
Yeah, you mentioned the injury last year again. He didn't pitch in the regular season after July 13th again. He came back in the playoffs. But the biggest thing with him is durability. And you mentioned kind of in our intro that when you look at this Rangers prospect group, there's a lot of really talented players, but there's also a lot of red flags, whether it's injuries or in some cases performance. And a guy who kind of falls into that as well is Josh Jung, one of the best hitters in college baseball at Texas Tech, was a top 10 overall pick. Immediately hit his way up the minors, looked really, really impressive. But he's had significant injuries each of the last 2 years. A stress fracture in his foot limited him in 2021. Then last year, he suffered a torn labrum in spring training and didn't play much at all during the year. But he did get up to the majors for 26 games at the end of the year. The Rangers weren't shy about pushing him, even though, again, he missed pretty much the entire year. Came back to play 31 games at the end of the year in the minors before they put him in the majors. What is Josh Jung's outlook? Because he's always looked like a really, really promising hitter, but two significant injuries, and there has been a little bit of a toll taken potentially on his body.
Yeah, when he hits, when he's on the field, he hits. He's just not on the field a whole lot. And kind of inside baseball America here, the day he tore his labrum, or at least that it was announced, we were putting our issue to bed with a gigantic Rangers spread. And Josh Jung was not an insignificant piece of it. He was also the org report that issue. So we had to, like, in the final hours, go back and, like, edit in, he's hurt, he's hurt, he's hurt, before that went to press. But to answer your question about Josh Jung, you know, I think he's going to be a really interesting ball player. Now, he didn't do particularly well when he got to the big leagues. He struck out a ton, and he was admittedly pressing. I think we have another org report on him or some sort of story on him recently where he went, or maybe it was another publication. I don't know. It's all clicks and whistles at this point, where he kind of went back to basics and tried to get back to the swing that really had him succeeding the way he did. And so this year might be a little bit of a reset for him, try to get some pressure off him. He's got the big league time under his belt. Frankly, if you told me right now that I'd be talking about him in the top 10 prospects, I'd have been a little surprised. I figured he would have graduated by now. But he has a spot up there. Whether it's third base or first base remains to be seen. He's not going to be a gold glover over at third base or anything. He could probably hack it over there, but he might have to move over to first at some point soon.
Yeah, and Nate Lowe has sort of staked his claim to the Rangers' first base job. So obviously, if he can stick at third, that's going to be the most important thing for Josh Jung's career outlook. It was interesting. I remember talking to an evaluator at the end of last season who saw Jung when he came back, and he said, you know, he had some concerns just the way the swing was working, the way his body was moving, that the injuries had, again, kind of taken a toll a little bit, and he didn't look like the same hitter pre-injury. At the same time, could have been rust. You know, again, it's really, really tough to know when a guy is out that long, and this is going to be a really important spring training for him and seeing what kind of start he gets off to this year, whether it's at Triple A or the majors, because again, he struggled in his debut last year, 39 strikeouts and 102 plate appearances. Again, you don't want to hold struggles in a guy's big league debut against him. I'm just going to be curious to see if he can get back to the hitter he was pre-injury, as you kind of alluded to with maybe some of the changes he's making, because it did stick out to me that people who really, really, really believed in him as a hitter before this most recent shoulder injury had a few more questions when they watched him after he came back. Josh, with that, I mean, what are the odds that Josh Jung contends for not just the Rangers starting third base job this year, but maybe even potentially is an impact rookie in the big leagues? Is he ready for that?
He could be interesting. It's going to be interesting. It's just going to be whether or not those changes that we just talked about, you know, take. And if he does do that, then, you know, maybe he's looking, I think. But he's going to be a hitter, I think. Maybe not like a true MVP, you know, rookie of the year caliber hitter just off the top. But maybe he gets there in a few years.
Yeah, and again, we'll see what he's able to do here. All three of these guys, Carter, White, Young, are top 100 prospects, and they all have a chance to be fairly significant contributors to the Rangers moving forward. In the case of Young, pretty quickly here, White and Carter got to AA last year, so they're not too far off. There are some interesting prospects outside of this group, and definitely some big names to talk about, Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker. We're going to take a quick break, Josh, and then I'll dive into those guys here as soon as we get a word from our sponsors.
I convinced someone else at Baseball America that we needed Indeed. Whenever we've had an opening in editorial staff the last few years, we've posted that job on Indeed, and we've been very happy to find that we get a lot of high-quality candidates right away, and Indeed makes it very easy to keep track, to sort, to do the interviews, to do everything on Indeed. But now we had an opening on the business side that we needed to fill, and so I told Tom Dondero, our president, I said, hey, use Indeed. And he did. And voila, just as easy on the business side. Lots of high quality candidates. We know it, but you should also know it, that if you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements, or else you do not pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you at every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Indeed makes it easy to hire great talent. According to ComScore, Indeed is the number one job site worldwide. And Indeed delivers four times more hires than all of their job sites combined, according to TalentNest in 2019. So start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. That offer is valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. That's Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Baseball America Rangers Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, here with Josh Norris. All right, Josh, so we talked about Evan Carter, Owen White, Josh Jung, the top three prospects in the system before the break. All three of them are top 100 prospects and fairly clear-cut top 100 prospects. One guy who was a clear-cut top 100 prospect last year and a clear-cut top-of-the-system type of prospect last year was Jack Leiter, celebrated pitcher out of Vanderbilt, son of Al Leiter, was the second overall pick in 2021 and had ace-type expectations, number two starter-ish. Mid-rotation was kind of worst-case scenario. I mean, there were a lot of folks who thought that he had a chance to be a really, really impact prospect initially and then ultimately an impact starting pitcher in the major leagues. The Rangers were very aggressive. They sent him straight to AA Frisco last year to begin his professional career. And it was a really, really rough year. He went 3-10 with a 5.54 ERA. Strikeouts were fine, 109 strikeouts in 92 and two-thirds innings. But the walks were really, really high. He really struggled to throw strikes consistently. The stuff was not as good as it was reported to be coming out of Vanderbilt, or it just wasn't as good as it was at Vanderbilt. Where is Jack Leiter right now? And you knocked him all the way down to number seven in this system. Was there any consideration for him higher? I mean, where does he stand right now?
it was a rough year, man. It was a really rough year. You know, you're right. It was a super aggressive assignment for a guy who came out as a draft-eligible sophomore. Probably shouldn't have been at that level, especially in that hitting environment. That is a place that's, you know, there's several Coors Fields in the Texas League. And Frisco is one of them, quite frankly. But part of it is he's learning how his stuff works. Like, his fastball plays better up in the zone than down in the zone. His curveball is not a particularly good pitch by scouting or analytic standards. His slider is the better breaking ball. And he's learning those things quickly. He's learning the importance of command. He's learning that just what you can and cannot do to really, really good hitters. I think you can give him a mulligan for last year since, like I said, he was double A is a big jump. You and I both know the jump from high A to double A is the biggest besides the triple A to the big leagues. And he didn't have a – he didn't throw in instructs after signing. This was his first test of any kind in pro ball outside of, you know, minor league spring training. But he found out the hard way that he's going to have to make adjustments to his stuff and to the way he deploys it to see the results he wants to see. So we'll see how, if he does it this year. But I've got to imagine that was a big reality check for someone so famous and so hyped and so celebrated to kind of, you know, be knocked around so regularly like he was in AA.
Yeah, you mentioned you can give him a mulligan, but at the same time, it is noticeable that you did drop him considerably in your Rangers farm system rankings, and he fell out of the top 100. What do evaluators see as his potential now? Do they still see a chance for him to be a number two, three-ish starter, or are they lower on it now?
There's a chance that he could be a mid-rotation starter, whether you want to call that. I call that a three because the middle of five is three. But he has to learn how to use his stuff. It's really that simple. And he has to command the baseball better. Does he have all the raw ingredients? You bet. But now he has to take those raw ingredients and make them into a delicious cake at this point. So, and we'll see. It's 1 year. I know it seems like he's been around forever, but he hasn't for 1 year. So we'll see what he can. And you and I both know that 1 year can make a lot of difference in the minor league. I don't know what he's been doing in the off season. Maybe we go to spring training in a few weeks. Go to spring training in a few months, and he looks like a new man. Who knows? We'll see. We will see. But 1 year, probably not the way you want to start off your pro career.
Yeah, and Leiter's not the only famous Vanderbilt pitcher in this system. Kumar Rocker, who was the 10th overall pick in the 2021 draft by the Mets, famously did not sign, sat out most of the year, pitched a little bit in indie ball in the months leading up to the draft. The Rangers took him 3rd overall, paid him a significantly underslot bonus, but still top 3 overall pick is very, very valuable and speaks to what a team thinks of a player. He did not throw in a regular season game after signing. He did come out and pitch in the Arizona Fall League, where it was very, very mixed, as you and I'll talk about a little bit later. You ranked him 10th in this system, and there was some debate whether he was one of the 10 best prospects in this system. I know based off your reporting, what were the initial reviews and impressions of Kumar Rocker, and what is his outlook?
Another guy who did not pitch in instructs. So when I saw him in the Fall League, that was the first time he had thrown to a hitter, as far as I know, as a Texas Ranger. So it was kind of interesting. You heard about the arm slot being lowered, and it was. And it's not quite the sidearm it was rumored to be, but it was lower, you know, lower three-quarters kind of slot. The stuff was okay. But you understand, there's a lot of rust there. He'd only pitched for the Troy Valley Cats, Tri-City Valley Cats in the Atlantic League.
Frontier League.
Reviews are very, very mixed. You know, frankly, after two starts that I saw the first and second start of his in the Fall League, there were evaluators that said if I didn't know who he was, I put an NP on him. And there are other ones, there are more patient ones, who said, you know, you have to wait. So he threw, I think, 6 times in the Fall League. And that sounds like he got a little bit better toward the end, which is understandable. It's a mixed bag, man. They believe in him, but he's got a lot of injury on his card too. And there's a reason. It was a nice little play that they had in the draft, getting him there, getting him where they did, and then using the savings to get Brock Porter, who's a couple spots up, and who has, you know, as high a ceiling as any of the high school right-handers that were taken this year. Kumar Rocker's, you know, he's got more question marks than the Riddler at this point. It's going to be really interesting to see where he goes.
Yeah, you mentioned he got better as the fall league went on. I saw his final fall league start, and again, there was some good and some bad, right? You saw the arm strength, you saw the physicality, and you saw the slider. The slider was a really good pitch. Again, it was 96. He held it for a couple innings. Slider was a good pitch. Again, you see the body and the physicality. Those are all good things. But you also saw a really, really, really difficult time commanding his fastball. There was no third pitch. He tried to throw something that might have been a cutter, might have been a changeup, but it wasn't a viable professional offering. It needs a lot of work, whatever it was. So you see two pitches and command issues, and a lot of evaluators who were there that night, when I talked to them, they said you put an eighth inning reliever on him. And again, a setup man is valuable. It's just not quite what you want with a third overall pick. At the same time, again, rust, it had been a while since he'd pitched. And you have to remember too, he was facing guys who were 2 to 3 years ahead of him on the development curve. A lot of guys who had played double-A baseball, a couple guys who had played triple-A. So, and this was his professional debut. So you certainly give him a little bit of a break, but I think it'll be interesting to see what work he did in the offseason in terms of his fastball command, his third pitch development, and what he looks like this year. One conversation I had with a couple of evaluators, and they all agreed, is based on what he showed in the fall, you can't send him to double-A based off of, especially after what happened with Jack Leiter, he would need to start in high-A. That's where he is right now, which again is understandable given he hasn't pitched in a while. This is going to be more of a slow burn. This isn't a fast mover, goes to double-A right away and crushes it. Based off what we saw in the fall league, maybe he comes back looking very different this offseason, but after this offseason, I should say. But based on the fall league look, it's going to be more of a slow burn. Josh, two other first rounders who are outside the top 10, Justin Foskey and Cole Wynn. Just real quickly, what's the update on them and what ultimately pushed them out of the top 10?
Foskey was pushed out by a little bit of lack of defensive value. I've had scouts who said that they don't believe he could play first base adequately, which was kind of the dagger for me. All right. Now, there were some really good hitting traits in there, and offense is going to carry him. There sounds like they're going to play him more at third base this year, which is actually not in the book. It's only, I think they may have made a decision about that after the book went to press or something like that. But I think you'll see him more at third base this year. But no matter where he plays, the bat is going to be the value. And I was a little scared by kind of a stiffer body and lack of athleticism and defensive value. So that's why he was there. And then who was the other one you mentioned? I'm sorry.
Cole Wynn.
Thank you. Cole Wynn. His deal, kind of a mulligan, just like Jack Leiter. He's younger than you think. He's just turned 23 this offseason. He spent all year at 22 in AAA. And part of his year was kind of scuttled by getting hit by a line drive and then kind of compensating after coming back and kind of pitching a little more timid, which I understand. You get hit by a baseball coming back at you, I'm going to be a little timid. But he also had some stuff that he needs to do in terms of, you know, fastball command and getting his lines to the plate cleared up a little bit. So I think there's something there, but it might not be as good looking as it was a couple of years ago. But again, mulligan for a guy who's 22 years old in AAA and like AA, the Pacific Coast League also has a lot of places that can really screw with your ERA and batted balls based on the hitting environment there. You pitch at Vegas enough, you're going to be in trouble. You pitch at Reno enough, you're going to be in trouble. You pitch at El Paso enough, you're going to be in trouble, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what stands out to me about this Rangers system is all these guys, they have something to like, but as you mentioned, there's a lot of question marks, maybe more so than other big-name prospects in a lot of other systems. Josh, outside, once you get a little deeper into this system, who are some of the guys that you think have a chance to really, really pop here in 2023? Because you mentioned there are some really interesting low-level guys here, particularly Latin American signees.
Yeah, Jason Morabell, he's probably going to be in Down East this year. I think he got there a little bit last year. He had he's got some really interesting tools. He could be an above average hitter with average power, kind of average-ish across the board with a six arm. He's, you know, at the front of that group. Gleyber Figueroa is a guy who kind of popped up. They were telling me about him right before-ish spring training started last year, and he came out and raked just a little bit in the ACL. You know, 280, 363, 616 slug. I'll take the 616 slug. He might have to clean up his throwing a little bit, but there's a hitter in there. Daniel Cuevas, pretty pure hitter. He's got a pretty nice little average-ish to maybe a plus hitter, some scouts think, with averages to fringe average stuff across the board otherwise. It'll be interesting to see this year what Emiliano Teodo does. There's a pretty split camp about whether that guy's a starter or a reliever. He's got a very skinny body, but a whippy arm. He brings fastball up to 100 miles an hour pretty regularly. Snap off a really nice slider. Changeup is nothing to write home about, but you know, we'll see how the body goes and see how he's learning the changeup. And then if you want to go even lower than that, which I so often do, talk about a guy named Leandro Lopez, who when we start when we're doing the handbook, he went by Leandro Calderon, but there's been some birth certificate kind of things since then, and he now goes by Leandro Lopez. So I kept him out of the 30 because he spent 2 years in the DSL, but it's the same kind of idea. Sits mid 90s, can touch a couple six hires, 3,000 spin curveball, former outfielder, if I remember correctly, former position player of some kind, and kind of has a really nice loose arm. And I think you'll see him at Down East or in the ACL at some point this year. And he'd be the next Emiliano Teodo, where it's a really interesting little player. Echedri Vargas, who was in the DSL this year, kind of an interesting little prospect. He's got kind of average to fringe average tools across the board, showed some really good strike zone discipline. And then a guy who was in the 30 for the book, but pushed out by Walcott, guy named JoJo Blackman, who is an outfielder who has a ton of tools. But the one tool that you really want, he doesn't have just yet. He's, I mean, we put him down as a 30 hitter, but he's got big time exit velocity. He can run like the wind. Former wide receiver who can play center field and runs really good routes. Doesn't chase a whole lot at the plate, just misses a lot in zone. Strong throwing arms. There's a bag of tools there. And I, as anybody who follows me and listens to these podcasts knows, I will take a bag of tools any day and let player development kind of put them together. I put him at 30, in the book at least, as a bit of a wild card. And you know, maybe I look really smart in 2 years. Maybe I don't. But that's kind of what the end of these lists are sometimes, unless you've got, you know, a super duper system, you're kind of throwing darts. So that's a name that I thought was really intriguing to me.
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot of interesting names in this system. Josh, as we wrap up here, any final thoughts on the Rangers farm system, franchise outlook moving forward? Because again, this is a team that is trying to get back on the winning track, and they're going to need some of these guys in the farm system to produce in order to do that over the long term, at least.
You know, we talked about in the Giants podcast, oh, these many days ago, about how they're kind of in the wrong division. The Rangers are also in a division that is not enviable to be in at this point. You've got the Astros, who are the Astros and will continue to be the Astros. But the Mariners, too, are kind of on the upswing. So you might be in a division where you have to battle two beasts. And then there's the Angels out there who track record doesn't precede them lately, but they do have two of the best players on the planet and have done a pretty good job complimenting them this year. So it's maybe a little tougher haul in that division for a while, but their system is, it's up there with the most fun ones I do. And I would say also, I think about Aaron Zavala too. He's a guy with a really good knowledge of the strike zone, but has been beset by injuries. He was probably been a little couple ticks higher on this list if he didn't exit the fall league with kind of you needed Tommy John light. He sounds like he's a little ahead of schedule in that regard, but you know, we'll see. It's been a lot of it's kind of Josh Young level injuries for that guy, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's been a theme of Rangers farm systems in years past. Lots and lots and lots of injuries, especially for the pitchers. And there's a lot of injuries in this group too, but we'll see if some of them can stay healthy enough to ultimately get to Arlington and help make an impact for the big league team. Josh, thank you so much for joining me today. We appreciate your time and insight as always.
See you later.
All right, everyone. That'll do it for another Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.